it's not like
the full press on the
wrong word. I'll tell you later. You do that. Good evening. How's everybody?
Good.
I'm assuming with all the rain, there's going to be some traffic delays. And coming down 85 is a mess for us. So everybody that comes down 85 got stuck and all that. So we will do the best we can. I'm sure people will come in. Did everybody get an email from me? I know Clayton did not. Did everybody get an email from me with a kind of a subtle change? We're going to rearrange a few things. We're going to combine these two classes. The page numbers are okay. I'll redo what's online, but I think most of you have already downloaded all the material. And then we're going to combine these two classes. They're very similar. There's a lot of overlap there. We're moving the folly class up here. It was lesson 11, it's now 7, and Marty's going to take that class for us. And I'm sure he's going to have some 8mm movies of Mason and some of the folly that existed in the Broadwell house. So
not that old.
Yeah.
Oh, Marty.
So hopefully you got that. I would just rearrange what's in your notebook, and that way you can make sure you're doing the right lesson. I guess I just wanted to make more time for, I just had one class for this and one class for that, and I wanted to make more time for that because there seemed to be more questions. You would help me if you want to just reply to me, or you can reply to the group, just with whatever questions that you have. We might be able to help address that. I was going to ask both Marty and Russ to come in during those last four classes, and maybe between the three of us we might get half an answer for you. Not a full one, just maybe a half of an answer. So tonight we're just going to talk about what's wrong with kids.
Why is
completely wrong. You know, that's a bad thing, given the typo comment that I had in my email tonight, to start the class off with a typo. That's probably a bad thing. So we've been going through the themes frequently, but the principles are extremely valuable. Trust God's plan, even when you don't see it and it just doesn't make sense and you don't understand it, trust God's plan. You know, strive for the ideal. Don't settle for what the world says, and find some sort of balance. Strive for the ideal. Ideal in your marriage, ideal in all your relationships, and especially the relationship with your kids. Strive for that. Don't settle. You know, I am responsible for me. I am accountable to myself. I've been given free will, and I can do the right thing regardless of the circumstance. So I have to accept that responsibility. And the best thing you can do for your relationship is put away yourself and practice that golden rule. And faith is obviously the foundation of everything we do. And fight these worldly things that is constantly creeping into more and more messages that your kids are going to bring home from preschool, elementary school, high school. They will be bringing home bad habits, bad things, and they're going to fall in one of those five categories more often than not. And it's our job to drive that folly out and to get them to understand that things just aren't like they are told in school. You know, this comes from, we didn't finish the last class, so I wanted to, When you read through this, what kinds of things came out from this when you went through the Deuteronomy passages? Anything jump out at you?
There.
As far as what kinds of lessons, when Moses gave this instruction, there's a lot in there regarding what parents should be doing. What is the reoccurring thing that parents should be doing with their kids? Teaching, right? Teaching what? Everything that they've learned and experienced and saw, all the miracles, all the wonders that God created, all the things that He's done for them when He brought them out of Egypt, teach that to your kids. And why is that? When we look at the why, he says it twice in these verses, the why is simply because it's for your good. all the commandments of God are to be observed, not because of any other reason that the world might say, but it is for your good, even when you don't see it. And children don't always see it. When we do something that is for their good, they will fight it, they don't like it, but it is still for their good, and we have to insist on that obedience. And that's where the ideal comes in. So, you know, teach your children comes up a couple different times in this, and the idea of obeying. Did you give any more thought to the character traits that we want our kids to adopt or to have? You know, I know it's an eye chart. Any character traits that you view as more essential than others? Pick five. That's going to be the exercise. So you need to pick five, because one of the classes, we're going to put a plan together and write a plan of what we're going to do before babies are even born. We need to have a plan of how we're going to raise this child, and that's going to be important. And so, you know, it is hard. I can't narrow it down to five necessarily. So you pick out five, and you'll never, by the way, get all of them accomplished completely in yourself or in your children. But work on five. And there's a lot of places you can go on Google and other places as far as good characteristics. But there's this in no order. Compassion, contentment, I think one of us said that. Courage, gratitude, honesty, gentleness, dependability, determination. All those things, I think, are critically important. And we need to do those things. Well, how do we do that? How do we adopt these characteristics for our kids? How do we help them become this one?
Yeah. I know you're not actually asking for answers, but it occurred to me in considering this list that one option might be to pick five characteristics that you've already got down on the idea that you know how to teach those, having mastered them yourself. Another idea might be to pick five that you're not very good at, so that you and your child can grow into them at the same time.
Right. And I don't know the right answer to that. I like both those answers.
I don't know that there is one, but it's two ways of maybe helping to parse that list a little bit.
Right. It may. Out of these, and that's not an exhaustive list, but I really do want you to identify five things, whether they are the ones that you've got down pat and you think you can help your child develop meekness, then do that. Or put meekness down because you want your child to develop meekness or humility or whatever it is. Humility, I think, is important. They need to know that the world does not revolve around them. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of kids think that everything is about them, and they need to understand that it's not. So I do think this is an important thing. So we'll keep coming back to this, but again, we're going to write a plan. How can we help our children be more humble, more honest, more gentle, more kind, more determined, tenacious? There's good, and tenacity is a wonderful thing within some limits, right? So, but I think tenacity would be a good characteristic for children, that they don't give up when things get hard, and they are determined to keep trying. And I think that characteristic would serve them well within evangelism. How many times are doors going to get slammed in your face? Well, if you give up easily, then I'm going to knock on one and I'm going to give up, and that's all I'm going to do. So we need to teach them that characteristic. So please go through this list. We can, if time permits tonight, we can kind of break up into some groups, and we can kind of brainstorm through this list of what kinds of things. But I do think this is a husband-wife exercise, quite frankly, together. That you sit down together at the kitchen table after the kids are put to bed at the end of a long day, and you go through this and try to determine what your plan is. So, did I say something?
Yeah, we go to bed before.
Okay, do you wake up before the kids then?
Yeah.
Oh, good. You're fine. Yeah. So get up early and do it that way.
Pretty much, it's like you guys.
Okay. Mom and Dad are going to bed. Let's read a story at 6 o'clock. So, okay. So, how important it is our example? So, when you look at those lists, obviously, if you're less than honest, if your kids overhear you telling white lies all the time, the chances of your kids being honest is not real good, is it? Right? So, your example in that, and how you treat people, becomes really important. Why is that so important to our children? That the parents set the right kind of example.
Every kid has a built-in hypocrite. Sense.
Right. Yeah, they do, don't they? It's just something they can kind of pick up on it, that mom and dad say one thing and they do another. And let's face it, you have the most influence over anybody. When they start going to school, your influence diminishes. And we have to fight to maintain that influence. And the job you do from infancy till puberty is critically... You find out after puberty just how good of a job you really did. Because after that, it gets even... Because, you know, hormones start raging and kids start doing crazy things. Not that your parenting stops, but it gets more difficult. If you didn't do your job from birth to puberty, your job gets exponentially harder after that. So it's very important why you've got the opportunity, why you have that influence, that you exercise that influence. Yeah, Jake?
I think a lot of times, well, most of those, I mean, they have to see those actually lived out. Teach them to be humble or be generous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any idea what that means in everyday context without seeing that.
It's got to be lived, right? It just can't be told.
Right.
And that's true with just about anything, right? You know, that when they go through the example over and over and over again, that's when it starts to set in and they see it as appropriate behavior in how I treat people. There's a lot of yelling and screaming in the house. That's the appropriate way to communicate. And if mom and dad are constantly arguing in front of the kids, well, that's the appropriate way to get what you want, is to fight all the time, apparently, because that's the example that we set for our kids. And that becomes, you know, again, more difficult. So you can look at all the different kinds of things that we should be doing. Courteous, politeness, positive, you know, are you happy? Are you joyous on a regular basis? Or are you Eeyore? Not much of a tale. Thanks for noticing. Is that who you are? Honorable, trustworthy, dependable, all those things, I think. So you have, you know, that same list of characteristics that we can work on, but I think it all falls under, you know, what we can do from an example standpoint. You're all familiar with this book, this little whatever, it's on it, I'm sure it's a more of a pamphlet. You know, a lot of truth in there, right? Some of your 20-year-olds may not fully understand what's here, and so, you know, putting things back, clean up your own mess, that kind of a thing. These kind of characters, I do like Take a Nap every afternoon. I do think that one should be more of an example, right, than just say go take a nap. I think we ought to show kids how to properly take a nap. So if you look at negative examples in the Bible of parenting, right, tell me about Abraham and Ishmael. What was the problem with that? What eventually happened to Hagar and Ishmael? He kicked them out, right? Because they're, you know, fighting amongst wives, right? And fighting siblings that wasn't dealt with. Ishmael was old enough to know better, and Abraham, instead of dealing with that, decides to listen to his wife and send them away. Not proper parenting. And, you know, Isaac, Rebecca, Jacob, and Esau.
Favoritism.
And so favoritism was shown. Did that get passed down? In what way?
Well, Isaac inherited it from Abraham, so
yes.
He came by it honestly.
Right, Abraham to Isaac, and Isaac to Jacob, right? And Joseph, you know, so became the favorite son, and the other sons didn't like it. Eli, what was his parenting mistakes?
He honored his sons above God.
Yeah, did not, you know, the sons were not doing what's right, and all he does, it seems, is you're not doing what's right, and that's it. Didn't correct them, doesn't seem like. Samuel, even, what were Samuel's kids like? Did not walk in his ways. So even good men can have children that don't turn out right. You know, and some of that might be, and sometimes gospel preachers have to watch out for this because they spend so much time traveling and holding gospel meetings that they're not there for their own family. And it becomes a huge risk that, you know, they're gone all the time. They're very busy doing good things for the Lord, but neglecting their own children. And gospel preachers or any of us that travel a lot, I think that's something we have to be mindful of. And for those times that we are home, it takes extra care and extra diligence on our part. David, wonderful negative example, right? I mean, I have a whole slide on David's mistakes. So, prodigal son and his brother. I mean, so here's a kid that wanted his way and wanted it now. You know, so you have all the different things that David did wrong, right? He could have or should have corrected these things early on, right? He should have disciplined his kids, but in some cases they just learned from the father's hypocrisy because they're Hippocratic meter was in full swing, and they noticed that David didn't always live the way he should and didn't parent the way he should. And so they certainly behaved in a bad way, and that was, you know, David's ongoing curse. So, you know, positive examples, you know, our faith choices that we make can prepare us to raise our children. Before we ever have children, the life that we lead can help us make the right choices after we have kids.
I'm sorry. No. Just go back. It just occurred to me that David might be a good example of why it's not always the best idea to take the high-paying, high-pressure job.
Ah, right.
Because you just inevitably lose time and energy and influence.
Yeah.
That if you have to work much, much, much harder to regain.
Yeah. It, you know, I had a job that I literally traveled 90%. Every Monday was a drive down to Hartsfield and came back every Thursday night after Connor and Catherine in bed. Can't tell you how many piano recitals and baseball games that I missed. And you'll never get those back. You know, and you justify it by saying, I'm doing this for my family, I'm providing, I'm doing, you know, and it just gets very old after a while. So mind your career choices, guys. There is a price to be paid for some of that. And I'm not saying that it's wrong, but what it means when you are home, it takes, you're going to have to go that extra mile and be there even more when you are home. But
it's sometimes surprising, I think, to dads in particular, that their employers and direct supervisors are much, much more understanding of,
yeah,
their commitment to family.
Mm-hmm.
If the dad will say, I can't do this, I can't do that, I've got whatever, open house tomorrow.
Right. Donuts with dad.
Yeah, whatever it is.
I didn't miss any of those. just so that you know. As if that's a secret.
Point being, don't be afraid to tell your boss that you're going to go be a dad.
No, you're right. And they are more understanding than you think. Yeah.
The other side of the same coin, though, is you can make the same point about the work that elders and deacons do.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. And I think that there's a very good reason why elder is elder, supposed to be a man of some amount of age, that your kids are closer, if not out of the house, because the time commitment is tough. Preachers have to watch out. So career choices matter, I guess. And so just be mindful of that. So David was all of those, but, you know, so our choices make a difference. The decisions we make, that parenting example that we set now, will affect generations to come, good or bad. In Abraham's case, there's some good and some bad that took place in that. They see when we make sacrifices, children do. This isn't all that popular today as far as parents being very active in choosing who your kids date. And when that dating gets more and more serious, you know, sometimes kids will rebel against that, and that drives two people close together. Mom and dad don't like the choice. But I think that involvement needs to be established fairly early as far as who you date and why. And why are you dating? Dating has a goal and has a purpose, and we need to look at it that way because that matters, quite frankly. And again, it's, like Hannah did, had a plan for her child before you're able to even be born. Hannah had a plan for her son, and that was the wonderful thing about that. And Samuel did the right things. Parents teach to your baby, even when you don't think they understand. Teach and teach and teach even more, because they do get building your house on the sand or the rock. They get that, and it's setting in, and it's setting the right example, and it's fun for you. The hard part is, if your John wants to go with Bill Sanchez to Costa Rica, and that overprotective part of you may not want that to happen, maybe the best thing for the child. You have to pray about that, and depending on how old the child is, you have to pray about that and think seriously about it. I'm going with Bill might not be the smartest thing, but, it's important. Again, some children are just difficult. Some of them are just more high-strung. Some of them are just more of a challenge. Family problems have lasting consequences. So depending on your relationship, husband and wife, those arguments do start to settle in. Favoritism is just wrong with children because they know. They just know. How mom and dad feel toward them. Even when the child doesn't have the traits, my dad played minor league baseball for the Cincinnati Reds, and baseball was a very big part of my dad's life. When my oldest brother, Chuck, was born, Charlie Brown, yes, the blockhead, when he was born, dad had these huge dreams that he would be a tremendous athlete and play baseball, and those dreams came crashing down the first softball game that Chuck played in Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts. Chuck was just not, is not, athletically inclined. Dad was disappointed when that realization came crashing down, but it didn't affect his relationship with his son. Sometimes we want something so bad for our child that our child could care less about, and we want to live vicariously through that child. And we push things on the child that in the grand scheme of life, it doesn't matter. And why push them into something that they're not interested in? That there are great things that you can do for that child. But even if they don't possess the traits that you want them to possess, the skill set, does it really matter? Still your child, and you need to love them and raise them as you should. Deception, again, that's more of an example thing. Eli is another terrible example of parenting. Negative things, we can go through each one of these. I want to make sure that we spend time on other slides. But, tons and tons of negative examples of parenting in the Bible, and we need to learn from these. What mistakes did Eli make? What mistakes did David make? What good things did David do? What good things did Samuel do? What good things did Jacob do? Those are things that we also should learn from as well. So what's wrong with kids today? You hear that a lot, right? What's Wrong with Kids Today? You probably can't read these. It came out. The children now live in luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for elders, love to chatter in a place of exercise. Children are now tyrants. You know, they contradict their parents. Gobble up dainties. So I think that dates this comment just a little bit. What is happening to our young people? They disrespect the elders. They disobey their parents. They ignore the law. That constant things like that. I see no hope for the future of our people because of the frivolous youth of today. They're reckless, disrespectful. Terrible things. The world is passing through troublous times. Again, young people. I think this one, I believe what really happens in history is that the old man is always wrong, and the young people are always wrong about what is wrong with the old man. The practical form of it takes is this, that while the old man may stand by some silly custom, the young man always attacks it with some theory that turns out to be equally silly. You know, this goes on for hundreds, thousands of years. You know, so when we look at, when we say what's wrong with kids today, I know that I drove my dad absolutely crazy. My hair was long. The clothes were, Dad hated them. The music I listened to, Dad didn't like. So I know I drove him nuts. So when we look at my generation, your generation, are there differences? Sure. I think the problem is that everything is too accessible for kids today, and we have to take great care and caution, because everybody's got a smartphone now. Even very young children have phones. They have access to the internet and things that are just frightening to you. And you know, from an elder's perspective, I'll tell you that your precious little boy, the one that you say will never ever do this or that, is going to experiment with this or that. And you can fill in the blank, and it will be pornography, it will be bad things, and you will be flabbergasted when you find that out, but it happens. And your precious child that you think will never ever do that will experiment with it. And you better take caution now and make sure that there is no computer in their room. It is always in a public place, and there's rules regarding the use of that computer. It will happen. I was talking to Connor about that a couple weeks ago, and I said, how bad is it? He goes, it's bad. It was bad when I was young, and it's bad now. So we put blinders on, and we need to be aware of that, and it's just more accessible for kids today than it was for us. So when we ask that question, what's wrong with kids today, it is trusting in the Lord. It is that plan. So you look at Columbine High School, one of the most tragic days in our country's history, caused by two teenagers. Every day in America, and these are all statistics for whatever they're worth, every single day, 1,000 teenagers become parents. Every day, 1,100 of them get abortions. Every day, 4,000 contract a sexually transmitted teenager. I realize that could be up to 19, but it can also be 13. 135,000 bring a weapon. I don't know what the definition of weapon is. It could be a butter knife. How websites interpret that. 500 a day begin drugs. 1,000 start to drink. 2,200 drop out of school. And 6 teenagers a day kill themselves. So, scary numbers. But what does all that mean? Right? So, does that mean, when you look at statistics like that, does that mean that all that is, and I'm not minimizing it, is that just demonstrating the power of Satan and we have to be careful? Because he's trying to get your children. He's trying to take your precious babies away from them. That's his goal. Is that what those statistics are trying to get us to see? Maybe. Is it the purpose of that to tell us that our kids are going to turn out that way unless we follow the Bible? Is the answer all we have to do is follow the Bible and none of those problems ever exist again? No. Is this what happens to a society that rejects God? I think there's some truth in that. Because society does impact that to some extent. And this one is the sure no. Are we going to explore all these things and those problems cease to exist after our 13th class? Some are wishful thinking that it will happen.
All on you, Larry.
Yes, that's why I'm bringing Marty and the rest of it. Obviously, the answer to that is no. So what is causing all of that? What kinds of things? Why are kids so troubled? Let me read this. There's this Dr. Leonard Sachs. He's a family physician and a psychiatrist. Most American parents are completely confused and going utterly in the wrong direction. There's a collapse of understanding of what parenting involves. And he's written several books. A mother and her 6-year-old child came in because the child had a sore throat. And the doctor says, I'm going to check your throat. The mother asks the child for permission. Do you mind if the doctor looks in your throat for a second, honey? Afterward, we'll go get some ice cream. And the answer was
no.
So then the bribes went up exponentially, and the answer was still no, until finally the child had to be restrained, which was a whole lot more traumatic for the child than just, open your mouth. It's not a question, the doctor says. It's a sentence. Open up and say, ah. Parents are incapable of speaking to their children in a sentence that ends in a period. Every sentence ends in a question mark. Some parents think that their job is to make their kids happy, and it's not your job. When you say, why are kids troubled? Let me go down. I'm going to go here. So the answer, the number one answer to what's wrong with kids today, is us. Over and over again. The second common answer is the environment. However, in the comments about environment relate to the parents. Because does environment matter? Yes, it does. But only if the parents don't correct the bad influence of the environment. And sometimes that's more difficult. Single mothers, very low income, that have to work exceptionally long hours. Are they there for their kids when they get home from school to make them do their homework? That gets exponentially harder. Not impossible. Otherwise, Ben Carson would not be who he is today. There are ways to break out of the environment, but it still goes back to parenting. That's the key. We are the problem with kids today because parents aren't being parents. We're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're not to be their best friend. Our job is not to make them happy. Your job is to keep them safe. Teach them how to be a good citizen, a productive person in society, and in our case, a great servant of God. That's our job, and when we do our job, are the kids always going to be happy about that? No, very rarely are they going to be happy about that. But that is your job, and your job is not to be their best friend. Your job is a parent, and that's hard, because nobody in this room wants to say no 100% of the time. That's why I said in the very first class, every chance you can say yes, say yes. Choose your battles as best as you can, but your job is to be the parent, not the friend. And so when kids go wrong, so there's all this trouble with kids. How does that make you feel, honestly? When you think of teenage years and you hear about the horror stories with teenagers, how does it make you feel? Only one with teenagers in the room, right?
Yes.
Well, you have a... How old is that? Oh! Well, you get up here and teach this class. So, how does the teenage years make you feel? What word would you use?
Unconditional. Nothing you can do about it.
Nervous. Yes. Right? I'd say nervous, scared, maybe, even. Right? Break out in a cold sweat. Any of those things. And it should. Yes, Trace. Did you have a comment? Okay. So, and they don't have to be if we do our jobs correctly now. And I think that's the ultimate lesson that we have to understand, is while difficult and time-consuming and an enormous amount of dedication on our part, it will work if we trust God's plan. That is the key principle that we have to keep. When it does get hard, you have to go back to these verses and trust God's plan. So,
can I make a comment on there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about teenagers and parents and environment and how hard it is as a single mom or a single father.
Yeah.
And just think back at as we just said, Kevin 16, Darcy 14, they're, I mean, tremendous, awesome, wonderful children.
Mm-hmm. Because of your wife?
100%.
Yeah,
that's the point I was going to make. I just can't imagine what it would have been like or where my kids would be now if we were both working.
Right.
I'll just take this opportunity to endorse stay-at-home moms being absolutely irreplaceable in that they can, to a much greater degree, control the environment and be the positive influence.
We have a class, I forget which one it is, but it talks about life choices that parents make, and that is one of them. Is that a hard, fast rule that is unbreakable? No, it's not. Can that occur and still be successful? The answer is yes. And those are choices that a husband and wife have to make together, what's best. And in both cases, that requires sacrifices to be made. The question is, what's best for the family as a whole? And I will say that was the best choice for Lynn and I to make, for her to stay home. But I have some friends that have gone the other way, and it's worked for them. So I will say that it's been easier for us. But
I can't imagine, and I've never known anyone who was a dual income family who looked back. Or rather, vice versa. Who was a single income family? Dad worked
and regretted.
Mom stayed at home.
I agree.
Not a single one of them will look back and say, I sure wish I had worked.
Right.
Life would have been so much better for my kids if we had more money.
Right.
Not a single one of those single family or single income families is going to say that.
And I think the other part of that, to me, is our marriages are critical to the health of our children. If marriages fall apart because of whatever reason, incompatibility or infidelity or whatever it is, single parenthood is hard. I cannot imagine it. It can be done, and we have some mothers here that are super women because somehow they've done a phenomenal job with their kids and have done a great job with their kids. But you talk to those young ladies, and it's hard. And, it wasn't their fault that their husband cheated on them, but, that becomes hard. So our marriages take a lot of work. So when you're raising your child, you have to take time for each other. That's a key part of parenting, is to make sure, I'll give you the advice my father gave to me. Never stop dating your wife. Even after four kids, never stop dating your wife. Call her up and ask her out on a Friday night. You arrange a babysitter. You take care of everything. You take her out. It's important to have that time. Now, the first time you do it, all you do is talk about the kids the entire time of your dinner, right? But that's important that you do that. That aspect of parenting is going to help you, I think, a lot. So what can we do? So when you did your lesson, you went through Titus chapter 2. What kinds of things are here? So the point of this is the good news for us, even though those statistics are scary, the good news is that we have an advantage, right? So We have all these acquaintances at work or at school or whatever, and they don't believe in the Bible. It's an old book that's out of date, is written 2,000 years ago, and no one cares. We don't believe that. So we have an advantage, don't we, with what we have in our possession. So what does Paul tell Titus? And how do we relate that to parenting? What are the older women to do? Okay? And what are the older men, what are the younger men to learn to become? Now, so you see all the different things that Paul told him. But now here's the kick, right? How much time do we take our kids to be with Katie Stevenson or Janice Heyman or Paula Hovanger? I mean, they can learn a lot from the older women. But normally our kids don't like to hang out with older people, right? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Should they go and hang out with Paula Hovanger and cook with her in the kitchen? I would say yes. They will learn these things. Paula takes this seriously. Katie can teach them more about humility than anybody on the face of the earth, about meekness. She can teach them that from just her wonderful example. These are the kinds of things. But we as parents have to get them into that situation, because children aren't naturally going to just go up and do that. Martin Broadwell took my son under his wing. Connor was a voracious reader, and Martin would constantly bring Connor books and sit down, and they would review the books together. It was a friendship that Connor treasured. But Connor didn't. Just Martin had to make the effort to do that and get up to Connor, and Connor loved it. And that's the kind of thing that we ought to be exposing our kids to, so that this can happen. If they're not exposed to the older women, or our young men are exposed to that, they don't have an opportunity to learn it. You know, but look at all the different things that the older women are to do. You know, what wonderful lessons that our kids need to hear. So, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you are spiritual, restore him. In the spirit of gentleness, keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another. So, again, lessons that we should be reading and studying and adopting into our parenting lifestyle. You know, that whole idea of gentleness, that watchfulness to take place, the sacrificial idea of helping people that need help. Somebody needs help moving, I'm going to take my son over with me and we're going to help him move. We're going to do those sorts of things. The McElvains need help demolishing a house. You bring your son who likes to swing a hammer. That's a great thing for him to do. 1 Thessalonians, and we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with all. Again, lesson after lesson after lesson, and that ongoing dependence on God's word that will help you parent even better. So that becomes critical. You know, scriptures. So all scripture is profitable. You know, I can't think of other words that you wouldn't want something that is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training, for instruction in righteousness, for equipping to every good work. Every doesn't have a superlative. There isn't an everyer. You know, so it is everything that is good. If it is good, it is found in the Bible. If it is not good, it is not found in the Bible. And those are the kinds of things that we have access to, and we should be taking advantage of this. You know, Peter said that we've been given everything we need toward a life of godliness. So there isn't anything else that we need to pass on to our kids other than the scriptures. There isn't anything else that is more important. If everything is there, again, you don't have everything earth. It's everything you need. Proverbs, you know, just trust in the Lord and He will make your path straight. And then Psalms 119, that is that whole dependence on God's word. That all these things are so critically important. And so when you think of all the characteristics, and I, you know, just a quick little search. So you have virtues and vices, always in contrast. So it's and when we talk about driving out folly, here's the thing: we can't just drive out anger without replacing it with something else. Because you create a vacuum in your kids, and it's got to be filled with something. So you, as they move away from selfishness, they got to move towards something, and that's our job, is to point them in the something direction. So we'll pick up there on Sunday morning. Again, make sure you look at that re-mail and how we got the lessons divided up. We just changed a few, so you might have to do two lessons coming up. Okay? If you didn't get the email, see me, and I'll make sure you did not get the email?
Yes.
You did? Okay.
We did not get it.
Oh, yes, we did not get it.
We did not get it. You did.
Okay, I will make sure I've got the Gibson's on. Yes. How you doing?
Yep.
Good. You know, you got a feeder.
Sorry.